Okay, the friendly lady says we've started. This is Michael Trotta. Today is January, February, March, April. I have to do that every time. April 4th, 2016. I'm with the October 2014 cohort. This is Coach to Coach, Practical 3, Class 3. Today we're talking about the Living Space Tool. Oh, and I'm with Group E. So welcome, guys. And I want to thank you all for showing up. I know kind of have a choice whether you're going to show up or not, and when you do, it makes the class way better, and hopefully you get more out of it. So Catherine just popped on, so I'm going to mark you here. Great. Today we're going to be talking about the Living Space Tool and playing around with a couple other tools that will allow us to move through it and help out one another. Before we start with that, any questions about any of this stuff? I know it's been a few weeks since we've been together, so I just want to open it up to any questions that you have about the other tools that we've worked on in this practicum so far. Okay. So I haven't seen anything on the forum, so I guess you guys are doing pretty well. Bridget, so you're here. I'm going to mark you here.
You
know, I want to just tell you guys, you know, talking to this morning's group, it can be sometimes weird coaching from not the usual place that you're coaching or running a program like we're doing right now, or like what I'm doing right now. So I'm a little out of sorts in that. I'm also seeing Genius here. I'm not in the usual place where I am when I run our class. I right now am in, not sunny at the moment, but Puerto Rico running a trip with my wife she's running it. Yeah, and the only reason I'm telling you guys this is because if you told me this when I started coaching, that you could run your business and job from anywhere else in the planet, anywhere in the planet that there was cell service, and spend the day with really awesome people, supporting them in incredibly beautiful places, and then have time with your family and time to yourself and get on a call and run out. Amazing. It really, really is amazing what and how businesses can be run these days. And I'm only sharing this because there may come a time, if it hasn't happened already, where as you're building your practice, you say to yourself, why the hell did I start doing this? This is so hard, or this is tough, or I don't know if I'm cut out for this. And I really, really, really want to encourage you to stick with it. There's a reason you started this. And it may not look like what you think other people are doing. You will find your own way to put it all together. But I will acknowledge that there have been plenty of times where I have wondered why I am choosing this really unblazed path to create my own thing. And it's because of moments like this. It's because days like the day I'm having today, I'm being able to be with you awesome people in a very, very cool place. And it has taken some time to get there and to create it and to find the people who are looking for what you have to offer. But I promise you it is worth it. So I just wanted to share that and hope that you find some encouragement in it when those times hit where you're like, what is going on? You do your work, you check in, you get clear, and I promise you, you can create exactly what you want to create. So that said, and since there's no questions about the other classes that we've had so far together, let's talk a little bit about the Living Space Tool before we start doing it. First, it's a metaphor tool, basically, except unlike the metaphor tool as we did it a couple weeks ago, it's a little, I find it to be a little more formulated, and it has a little bit more of a container around it in that you're looking at a specific room or space in a person's living area that is a representation of an area of their life that they're not satisfied with. And that little bit of a container I find to be sometimes easier to do than any metaphor that might come up. Other people might not find it that way, but I do, and we'll see what it's like for you guys. A little bit of a formula that I've put around it, I'm just going to lay out kind of three steps to using the Living Space tool. And essentially what I did, if you have watched Martha's video, hopefully by now, which I think is a phenomenal example of how to do the tool, the way I broke that down, I'm just going to name the parts for you. So first, you want to have your client either write or tell you about their living space. And there's a couple ways that you can do it. You can just say, hey, tell me about your home, and leave it at that and see what they tell you. Listening for areas of satisfaction and areas of less than satisfaction. You can be a little more specific and say, tell me about an area of your home that you're, it's the area that you least like. I want to know about that and see where they go. And you can also have them write it down. And in just a few minutes, I'm going to have you guys do the same thing. You might either have them tell you, or I like to actually have them write it down. So that's kind of step one. Hear a description of an area of least satisfaction, talking about the actual home. And all of this, like Martha explained, is because the things that we choose for our living space are often, if not always, reflective of it, some part of ourselves. And so when you find an area, somebody's home, that they're not satisfied with, kind of listen to it and their description of it with what I would call soft ears, knowing that they're talking, or that they may be talking, about a part of themselves or their life that they're not satisfied with. We'll talk about what to do with that in a minute. So step one, write the description or tell the description. Step two is explore that area of least satisfaction as a metaphor. So, for example, and like the one she had in the video, if the person says something like, you know, my home is too small, very likely a metaphor for some area of life that is too small and restricting. And so you can kind of put it back in them with a few hunches like, I have a hunch that life is feeling too small or you're feeling confined. Tell me where I'm wrong and see what comes up and out of that. And so that's step two. And in that step two where you're throwing out hunches, just a quick story for you. One of the things that I learned from Martha and I really, really admire about her is that she has no problem being wrong. If you ever get the chance to see her coach or be coached by her, she will throw out theories left and right without an attachment to whether she's right or not. And always with the, tell me where I'm wrong. I know this might sound simple. This is the kind of thing that we've been talking about since the beginning of your training. But if you have that freedom and the detachment from having to be right, you're going to get to your clients, you know, those rough areas quicker. And just to kind of illustrate it, I don't think I told you guys this before, but I in my coaching, often use games and survival skill type things to kind of add metaphors. I know I told you that, but a game that I play is where clients have to sneak into a particular area and steal something back. And it's based on a kind of like a native and archetypal story of stealing one's fire back. And so people have to come in and sneak something away from one person who's kind of holding and protecting the space. And years ago when I first met Martha, we were playing this game with a group of like maybe 12, 14 people. And she was one of the participants. And I was the one teaching the skill, like, here's this game, right? So I think I know how to play it, and you have to be very stealthy and all that, and I explained all that to the people. Well, everybody playing was trying really hard to be careful, and to be still, and to be sneaky, and to not get caught. And Martha just kept walking in and trying this, running up and trying that, like noisy, 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 sneaking here, sneaking there, getting out left, right, and center. And I was like, what is she doing? Like, she's not even trying. But the truth is, what I learned was she was trying a million different ways. And yes, while she totally got out a whole bunch, she also managed to steal the things that she was supposed to steal more than anybody else. And it was because she wasn't afraid of, I guess you would say, failing or of making mistakes. So the same thing, I would encourage you to feel free or at least practice that same thing with throwing out hunches with these metaphors. If you have an idea that, oh, I think this might be about that, throw it out there, with a tell me where I'm wrong, and let your client, and really do your best to create the space where your client feels comfortable enough to be honest about what you're throwing out to them. Let them tell you, yeah, that's totally it, or you know what, that's not quite it. And either way, it's as long as you're getting closer to their truth, you're on a great path. So, quick review. 1, write up the living space description. 2, explore the area of least satisfaction. Tracy, I'm getting some feedback from your line. Not a lot, just a little. If you know that you're making noise, if you could mute, that'd be great. So 3, the final piece to this, is once you've identified that area of least satisfaction, do the work on it, or use the body compass on it, or use the 3 B's, or start using turtle steps, and then just go into the coaching process. And that, if you keep those 3 basic steps as a framework to using this tool, I think you'll do pretty well, especially with all the other tools that you have in your toolbox by now. Okay, that's it. That's all I got for today. I will answer any questions that you have, if I can. And now we're just going to go into actually practicing the tool. I'm going to have somebody coach, somebody be the client. You'll each get about 15 minutes, and then we'll do a quick Q&A at the end. And we'll learn what we can learn from it. Any questions before we do that, though?
No.
Cool.
This is Tracy, and I would love to be coached. So okay. I just thought I'd put that out there.
Tracy, you coached last time, right?
Yeah.
I just want to check with Michael, Tracy.
I'd love to coach because I haven't coached for a while.
Who is that speaking? Rhonda?
Rhonda. Yeah,
okay.
I haven't had a chance to coach for a while, so that'd be
great. So, Rhonda, why don't you be the coach? Tracy, if you'd be the client.
Yeah.
Great.
So, Michael, just before we start, since we've only got a short amount of time, would it be better for me to get Tracy to just talk about the area of her home that she's not happy with?
Oh, you know what? Thank you for reminding me. No, you know what? Yep, sorry about that. This is what I wanted to do before we actually start to save each of you time.
Mm.
Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give each of you 2 minutes to pick an area of your living space that you're least satisfied with and describe it in whatever way you want. You can write sentences. You can write bullet points. Just describe the area that you're least satisfied with in your own way. 2 minutes. It's 4:15 right now. I'll let you know when you have a minute left. Why don't you do that starting now?
Okay.
Thank you for reminding me. Okay, that's about a minute. You have about a minute left.
I'm ready.
Okay, I want everybody doing this. So take that 1 minute. If you are done, that's fine. I'll just wait till give everybody that full extra minute. That way we won't have to do this each time. Another 30 seconds. Okay, let's finish up. So again, I'll give you approximately 15 minutes to work on those three steps. I feel that, you know, it's worth giving you a little more time. I will. If you were done at 15 minutes, great. The goal really is to find the limiting belief by using the metaphor and then start working on the limiting belief. Rhonda, you're on with Tracy. You're ready.
Okay, so Tracy, tell me about the area in your home that you're least satisfied with, that just you don't like that much.
Well, you know, and just now, just trying to write, it's okay. So first of all, I ended my writing so quickly because it just immediately dawned on me what's going on. But my space is beautiful. It's large. Mm-hmm. There are so many windows, and out of each very large bay window, I see the sky. I see this beautiful L.A. vegetation with the trees and the tangerines and the lemon trees. And there's many rooms and, I mean, not many rooms, but it's a lovely, my mind is very free. And but what really got to me was it feels temporary. I have this sense that it's temporary, and I don't know what to, I don't know if that means, I mean, anyways, everything feels temporary for me. It's not my place. It's a rental, and I owned a place, and I don't know. I'm feeling lately like I walk in there, and it's like, it's temporary. I don't know how long I'm going to be there. I get this feeling that it's temporary.
Tracy, I have a hunch that that you may be struggling to enjoy the beauty a little bit because you're afraid you're going to lose it at some point. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You know, it's really not that. What I'm feeling, that there are so many things that are temporary, that are like sort of in flux, that I can take it or I can leave it if I want. And I don't know if I'm completely sold and living in Los Angeles or if I want to go back to New York. And I have this boyfriend that he's really into me and wants to be serious. I don't know what I want to do. My job at UCLA, it's, you know, I can kind of take it or leave it.
It sounds like the fact that it's a rental, that it's not actually yours, that when you look at everything, you think, well, it's beautiful, but it's not really mine. It's not, I can't rely on this to always be there. Tell me where I'm wrong.
I don't know if I want to be. I think I want my own place again. You know, it was really liberating selling my apartment in New York. It was liberating. But now, I guess, you know, to your point, you're right, because I don't want a rental. I want a home. I want a home. I really do.
So no matter how beautiful it is, the fact that it's not permanent, that it's not yours, you don't feel... Do you not feel completely relaxed there?
I guess that's, you know, I don't know if I want to be where I am. I don't know. I don't know. It's like this I don't know. It's an I don't know. It's a big, huge question mark. And I feel like I just walk around in this apartment and I know that it's not forever. And I don't know what that means.
Well, I have a hunch that the fact that you're renting and you would prefer to own a place, and so that's this lack of permanence, is reflecting your concern about the lack of permanence and sort of stability in other areas of your life. Tell me where I'm wrong.
Well, it's this feeling of, where do I plant my roots? and I don't know. I don't know. And I can sort of, I don't know. I don't know if this time period here, if I should just relax, and that this time period here in Los Angeles is all about learning. Learning this whole, you know, getting in, getting some experience in the medical field at UCLA. I'm throwing myself into Kundalini yoga. I am going every single day and doing twice a day on the weekends. And I'm learning so much. And I've fallen in love with Kundalini yoga. And I'm thinking maybe I'll do the teacher training. I feel like I'm in a learning mode. I'm learning this coach training. I feel like everything, it's a downloading of information. Now, I don't know if this is like my little hub with this apartment, if I'm supposed to like download for 6 more months and then I'm out of here, or if I'm here to stay.
So, Tracy, what actually in your life does feel permanent at the moment, since you've obviously your apartment's not temporary and you're sort of feeling like you've got a lot of question marks in different areas, but is there an area in your life that actually does feel permanent or does feel extremely stable?
I love the Kundalini yoga. I can't get enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love it. I get so much from it. And it's a community here of people that I really relate to. And I love that. But, you know, I could go, I really like that. I guess that's one thing I really like. I'm really satisfied.
What's your body compass reading when you think about the yoga?
It's amazing. I can't get enough of it. It's divine. It downloads me divine information. And that's where my coaching practice, I have to figure out how to pull in these divine messages into a mainstream practice. And that's what I'm trying to figure out right now. And I really would like to take this teaching, the teacher training for Kundalini yoga, not necessarily to be a teacher, but to implement these principles and practices into coaching. And it's still a little vague. I still feel like I'm in the oven baking.
Can I stop you there for a second, Tracy?
Yep, sure.
Yep.
I'm sorry, Rhonda. Okay, so we've heard so far that she is, I actually want you to feed back to me what you heard about the living space and what her area of dissatisfaction is with it.
Because I heard that the space itself is beautiful. It's, you know, her mind is very free, mm-hmm. And it's very large and spacious. But the main area of dissatisfaction for her is that it feels temporary, and she really, really wants to feel like she has her own home. Like it's not hers. It's not her own space. It's just like on borrowed time. And I'm sensing that, yeah, it's wanting something that she feels that is stable and permanent, that she's needing that grounding presence in her life.
I totally agree with you. Let's see if we can find, just be a little more direct with her, find a direct parallel in her life where she's having that same kind of feeling. Where is the impermanence of her living space reflected somewhere else in her life?
Yeah.
And she's named a few things, but let's go with the
job. Yeah, actually, I was just about to go into work. Tracy, as Michael said, in terms of finding that other area in your life where you're feeling that you want more permanence but you don't have it at the moment, where it feels temporary, what is another area in your life where
it's this relationship,
you feel like it's temporary but you would like it to be more permanent?
It's really this relationship with this, I mean, you know, this relationship.
Yep.
I don't know if I should fully embrace it or not. And it's like I want to have, but I'm kind of scared about that.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm ready for that, to really bring somebody into my life who's so serious about me. I mean, he just is ready to, you know, like, you know, wants to get married tomorrow. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? And so just, you have to court me, you know, you have to, like, let's take our time. But I think that's a really big piece of it. And also this job thing. I haven't figured out what it is I want to do.
You and I have obviously, we've talked about your job at UCLA before, just so everyone else in the class knows. But how do you, in terms of your job, just before we go back to the relationship, does that feel permanent to you or does that feel temporary?
It feels so temporary. I feel like I am just, it pays me, there's no reason for me to stay other than that. I feel like I am, it's a training program. I feel like I am there solely getting experience to take it somewhere else, to go either to the private sector or I don't know, go back to New York City and work for a large hospital and get paid, you know, some more money.
Tracy, I know that financial security is really important, and obviously if you want your own place, that's important.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it sounds, my hunch is that how you feel about your living space being temporary, and even though it's beautiful, you want something more permanent. It's being reflected in what's going on in your career at the moment, because even though it's you're learning and you're getting something valuable out of it, and it's, you're getting paid, obviously, but you're not passionate about it like you are other things in your life. It doesn't
feel... Can I just
check
in here for a second,
Rhonda?
Doesn't
feel
like
it's going to be permanent. Tell me I'm wrong.
Rhonda, is this information that you know because you've worked with her, or...
It is.
Like,
there's a couple of things
okay.
we've worked together before.
So I wanted
so that's
to check
why
in
I was saying.
With
I just wanted to...
Okay.
Yeah, because I... So,
thank you for just clearing that up, because I wasn't sure where you're going.
That's something we've talked about her job before.
Good. Okay,
yeah, no,
so you do have background that I don't have. Thank you.
Can you do me a favor, though? Mm-hmm.
Just check in with her, because when you asked her for the parallel, she brought up the relationship, and then you brought up the job, and then she gave you more information.
I was going to go back to the relationship as well. I wanted to touch on both of them, because I think they're both. Mm-hmm.
Can you, but just for the, like, simplicity's sake in this practice, would you mind just asking her to pick the one that right now in this moment feels most relevant to her?
Oh, sure.
And then
Go
look for the limiting belief in that, and then work it whatever way you feel best.
Okay.
Cool.
All right. Great. So, Tracy, which when you think about, you know, obviously comparing what's going on in your relationship and what's happening with your work, which one do you think is the one that
this relationship,
scary, but you
really
would like it to be more stable?
This relationship thing is something that I want, I'm really trying to work on resolving it. And, you know, because perhaps that would be a reason why I stay here in Los Angeles. And I put it out of my mind, I really do, when I come into my apartment. I walk around my home and I put that out of my mind. I push the whole relationship thing out. I'm not facing it. I'm not looking at it. And I'm kind of afraid to jump into a relationship. I can't believe that I just figured that one out. I'm afraid.
So Tracy and Rhonda, actually, Rhonda, I want a coffee talk with Rhonda for a second.
Yep.
So that's kind of a big one right there, right?
It is a really big one, I know,
Yeah. So she's started with the not feeling really attached to the home, and now we're talking about the relationship, and she's acknowledging she's kind of afraid to commit to it, which is probably why she's having that same experience with the home. Whether that's it or not is kind of irrelevant, because now we're talking about the relationship piece.
Yep.
So what are you curious about knowing? Like, where might you go with
this? I'm curious to know what's holding her back from jumping in if she really likes this guy. Like, is it about her, or is it about him, or is it a combination of both?
Yeah, brilliant.
What is
no,
it really,
I noticed
what is it about a fear that she has, that, you know, what are the beliefs or the thoughts that she's having that are blocking her from going further forward or making a decision either way about it?
Great. I love that. I notice a lot of coaches in training try to ask the question in kind of a gentle, roundabout way. I like what you just did, like nice and direct. Like, so tell me what it is about this relationship. What do you think the fear is about? Go right into it. There's no reason to kind of be on the outside of this. Go right where you were going and let's see what she can tell
us. Okay, great. Thanks. Okay, Tracy, so do you know what the fear is that you have, or fears or thoughts that are stopping you from making a decision about the relationship that are causing you to push it away at this point?
I don't know why I push him. When he's really serious now, I'm just afraid it's not going to work. I'm afraid that I will be impatient and that I will be highly critical and judgmental, and I'm afraid of living with somebody again. I'm afraid, and I feel that when I let my guard down, and I feel when we communicate, he and I, our souls, it's this beautiful dance, and I just adore him, and I feel so drawn to him, but in a beautiful, beautiful dance. And then I let go, and he moves forward, and I get scared, and now all of a sudden, you know, oh, I don't know if I want to be here in Los Angeles, and I see that I'm starting to run. It's a temporary apartment. Oh, I don't know if I want to be in LA. So I guess in answer to your question, I'm afraid that I'm afraid of it not working out. You know, I'm afraid of of him not, you know, being up to my standards. But he's not going to be able to, like, pull his weight. And, you know, I feel like I want a lot. I've made so many sacrifices on my own, and I'm afraid of introducing another person into that mix if they're not going to be able, you know, to, like...
Tracy, I have a hunch that you're afraid that if you allow yourself to get further into this relationship, it will hold you in L.A., and then if it doesn't work, you may feel that it stops you from going where you would have gone if you weren't in the relationship. Tell me where I'm wrong.
You know what it is? I think I'm just afraid of just letting things happen. Mm-hmm. And just like Tracy, what's the big thing? So, you know, take a leap of faith and fall into this beautiful feeling that you both have and let it happen instead of trying to plan what's not, you know, the catastrophe that, you know, I think that's really what I need to do. And that's a beautiful understanding that I just came to myself, that it's about me trusting and letting go and letting things happen organically.
What do you think you need to help you embrace that uncertainty?
I need to relax. And I need to see more because he lives in San Francisco, and I need to see him more consistently. And, you know, that would help. And I believe that I need to communicate what I need in order to
make... Let me stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to cut you off, Tracy. I want you to finish your thought,
yeah,
please.
Yeah.
And then I want to stop.
No, the thought's finished. Thank you.
Okay. So, Rhonda, what I'm hearing is that she's trying to manage the future.
Right.
She doesn't want, you know, everything she's talking about is future tense. we would call that future tripping. And she and I liked your hunch, and I was right there with you, and she kind of gave a little clarity on, well, it's not quite that, and it's a little bit of this. So it was great that you threw it out there. I'm kind of curious now. I'm starting to think about, well, what is the thought, what is the fear that's keeping her from even just going one step further, seeing what right now in this moment is like, and then what the next moment is like, rather than what tomorrow or a week or a month from now is going to be like and how she can manage that. What's stopping her? And so I'm trying to think of how I would ask the question.
That's what I was trying to think of. It's like how to just go, not just necessarily one day at a time, but how to not worry too far about the future too far in advance.
Well, actually, so rather, because what you're talking about is almost trying to help her figure it out before we even do that. What is she afraid of? What are you afraid is going to happen?
Mm. Yeah.
And then you can just do the thought on that. Like, what is your biggest fear? And that I might just ask that. What is the biggest or most relevant fear in this moment about this relationship? And then just do the work on it. So I'll make it, Tracy, you heard the question.
Yeah.
What is the biggest fear in this moment about this relationship?
That it's going to be work. This guy's got four kids. And financially, you know, he's still trying to figure things out. And I guess and that's a beautiful, you know, listen, I'm afraid to give the guy a chance, I guess, you know.
What will happen if you do? What's the worst thing that could happen if you give him a chance?
That there's nothing bad that can, I mean, worst thing that can happen is that, you know what? There's not a lot, there's really nothing bad that can happen. I mean, other than that.
That sounds like your rational thinking. That sounds like your rational thinking mind. I think there's something in there that's a little more afraid, and it's okay if you can even recognize it now as irrational. I'm inviting you to just allow the irrational to come up. If I give this guy a chance, what might happen?
Geez, you know, I might just be happy, and we might just build a beautiful future together and a partnership. And I don't know why I don't let that just kind of happen. And I'm afraid. Why? I don't know why I'm afraid. I feel it in my body. It's like I'm afraid. I don't.
I hear
weird.
That. I hear that. And Rhonda, I am going to hand it back over to you in a sec.
Okay.
Tracy, are you afraid of losing control?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't feel of this relationship, Michael, because I really used the Byron Katie work on this, and I was very much into his business.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute I worked on that and I got myself out of his business and put myself into what I needed to do, it's moved forward. This relationship has moved forward. So I do see that I fall back into this control thing. It's control. I'm a control freak about. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I've been, you know, a single parent for so long. I raised my 24-year-old daughter and had to do everything, the finances, and I'm afraid to like trust that somebody else. I'm afraid to like have somebody else come in and I can relax and that they're going to do it right.
So you used the word trust.
Mm.
And you also talked about being in your business versus being in his business. And my hunch is, I'm kind of often when we're afraid of, you know, we ask the question, I don't know if I can trust this person. What we're really saying is, I don't know if I can trust myself. And that's where the control thing is. Does that make sense? Like, if you allow yourself to give yourself over to this relationship, you don't know if you're going to be able to trust yourself enough to keep what's important to you. Am I putting that in a way that makes sense to you?
And I think also that I'm not going to be fully present and loving to accept. You know, I guess I'm afraid that I will be critical and judgmental if, and I know, and I, anyways, it's a learning, you know, relationships are all about learning about each other, so.
But those aren't things that you've done yet, are they? Have you been critical of him and shown up as a person that you don't want to be with him yet?
No, I mean, I can do
okay.
this.
Okay, so that's all future tripping stuff. Right now in this moment, the fear is, and please tell me where I'm wrong, is about you losing control. And what I heard even behind that, well, maybe that's enough. I do hear that other piece behind it, like, can I trust myself? But does it sound like a worthy thing to explore if I going into this relationship means I'm going to lose control? Does that feel like a resonant, painful thought?
Yes, it's like driving a car with, you know, down the hill without your hands on the wheel.
Okay, perfect. So Tracy, Rhonda, that's what I would do. Why don't you try to do the work on, if I allow myself to go into this relationship, I'm going to lose control.
Hmm. So we need to find a probably a more succinct statement as a limiting belief, don't we?
I think that's fine, actually. But if
you think it's fine, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. So Tracy, you've got this belief that if you go into this relationship, you're going to lose control. Is that true?
Yes.
Is it true the thought, if I go into this relationship, I'm going to lose control?
Yes. 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Can you absolutely know that it's true? If I go into this relationship, I'm going to lose control.
No. No. It might be actually a lot of fun.
So when you think that thought, if I really give myself over to this relationship, I'm going to lose control, how do you feel? How do you feel in your body when you think that thought?
It's like a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it is a total panic and hard breathing, and that just like I said, it's like a top of the hill, and I let go of the wheel of a car, and I just go straight down. And I guess
how do you treat the relationship in your mind when you think that thought?
I'm very in my mind. I don't fully jump in. You know, I'm standing by the side of the pool, and I'm not jumping in. And I'm looking at how beautiful that water looks, and it looks delightful, and it's hot out, and I wanted to jump in and dive in without any of my clothes on. But I don't. You know, I stand by the side and wait for what? I don't know.
What about yourself? When you think that thought, if I get into this relationship, I'll lose control, how do you treat yourself when you think that thought?
I'm tight, uptight.
Mm-hmm.
Uptight.
So who would you be if you didn't have the thought, if I get into this, go into this relationship, I'll lose control?
I would be in total adventure. It'd be just in total bliss and adventure, I guess, adventure and spontaneity and, like, just going with the wind and just really flying, you know, like, okay, let's see where this goes.
So let's turn it around now to, let's do the turnarounds now.
Wait, before you do the turnaround, I just want to, so adventure, spontaneity, going with the wind, those are kind of concepts. See if you can keep her there just a little bit longer, because you just made a really big, like, shift from being in this tight, anxiety-filled observer of life rather than being in life place to an adventurer going with the wind. How do those things, what are the qualities in her body?
Okay, Tracy, so,
this is your real PowerPoint, Tracy, where you really get to help her feel what it's like to feel without that thought, so that afterwards she can see it was just the thought driving those. Yeah, good. So go ahead.
Okay, excellent. Thanks, Michael. So, Tracy, when you're thinking about what life is like without that thought, you talked about, you know, being an adventure, just feeling very free, that blissful feeling. How does your body feel now?
It's just, I mean, everything from being like wound up or like a tight fist, it's completely relaxed and open and like laying on the floor, just open, open. My eyes are more open. I see things more, there's more light.
More light.
My breath, more light in my breath. I can feel things. I'm breathing just, you know, with soft breath, and it's being in the present, just being.
So I want to just jump in because I'm hot on this thought. Rhonda, here's one I just want to share with you. So control is the issue for her, right?
Yes, yes.
Whether she's going to have it or not. And somebody having control is often, what kind of decisions are they making? So play with her around, what sorts of decisions do you make when you're wound up versus when you're open and wide-eyed? Like, which ones elicit better questioning and better choices and the things that actually make up a sense of control? In which of those two modes?
So,
Tracy, when you're—that's great, great idea. Tracy, when you're feeling really wound up and you're really, really anxious, what kind of decisions do you make then?
Knee-jerk reactions. Impulsive buying. Like, I'll just see something and I'll just buy it without really thinking about it or joining a membership. Or signing up for something, or, you know, I tend to do things too quickly, shall I say.
So when you're, it sounds like when you're in that state of feeling anxious or worried about control, you actually do things which have a lack of control, which is an interesting paradox.
Yes,
when you're feeling very present and you're completely relaxed and not anxious about anything, you're not worried about control, what kind of decisions do you make then?
Well, there's a lot of wisdom before any decisions. There's a long, thoughtful, meaningful conversation that there's a lot of space, I'll put it. There's a lot of space. Before anything comes out of my mouth, basically.
So, Tracy, it sounds like my hunch is that when you are not worried about trying to be in control, you're relaxed, you're fully present, you feel very, very good, you actually make better decisions because you're coming from a place of wisdom and you actually have more control over the decisions that you, or your thought process and your decisions that you make because you're relaxed and calm. Tell me where I'm wrong.
That's precisely the truth. Yes. And I find that I don't make so many decisions. I just sort of let things I don't need to make decisions because I'm very, everything is just sort of happening. And I don't know if that sounds right, but yes.
Great.
That is, yes. Thank you.
Turn her around now. That's a perfect time to do the turnaround.
Okay.
We've got about
right.
2 minutes left.
Okay. Great. So let's turn around that your the original thought to the opposite. The original thought was, if I go into this relationship, I will lose control. I'll lose control.
Yeah, if I go into this relationship, I don't like to use that word control. Okay, so one more time.
Well, no, the original thought, the negative thought was, if I go into this relationship, I won't be in control.
I don't need to be in control.
The opposite would be...
I don't...
The opposite
for me...
would be...
I don't need to... If I go into this relationship, I will be in control in a relationship, right?
And give me three examples of where that could be true.
I guess this whole word bothers me, control, because I don't want to be in control. I just want it to be a beautiful, you know, I want it to just be something that I'm comfortable with. And that.
So I'm going to, wait, can I stop you, honey? Just because we're literally. Way past time.
Yeah.
And something I'm noticing that Tracy's actually being really, I'm sorry, I keep doing that. Rhonda, you're being extremely patient, and I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And
I
what I'm noticing.
A bit more.
Well, no. You're I don't mean it that way. I think I'm having a hard time. I feel like I'm overdoing it, so I'm sorry.
That's okay.
After you get, you make a little, and a lot of clients do this. I do it when I'm a client. What I'm noticing, though, Tracy, is when you make a little bit of movement forward, you then do a little bit to undo the forward movement you've made by saying things like, well, I don't want to get into the philosophy of the word control. I totally get where you're coming from. I mean, Byron Katie would say, you're not in control. That's the aha right there, you know. But I think what you got in your turnaround, and I'm just going to lay it out and see how it lands on you, when if you go into this relationship, the original one was, I'm afraid of not being in control. If you go into this relationship, you are in control because you are the one making the choice. That's more of control than if you don't go into the relationship, because it sounds like to not go into the relationship or at least explore it is you not actually having control. It's your fear having control over you, because everything you've described, at least the most of it, is that right now in the present moment with what you know about this relationship so far, is that it's fulfilling to you and that it kind of brings you to life. And it's just the thought that somehow something's going to happen where you don't have choice anymore if you go into the relationship. That's the thing that's making you hold back. Tell me where I'm wrong.
That's exactly what it is. Thank you for
articulating. Right. So to actually, to make the choice to go on one more date is an example of you having choice. We'll call it control for now, but it's really, we're talking about choice.
Okay.
Make sense? Cool. And if ever the relationship starts to feel like it turns out, well, it's not what I want, you can still have control or choice to say no to it. Make sense?
Yes, I can.
Yeah,
I can.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I'm going to stop with there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say thank you, because that you bringing up the issue of choice being another word to use for control is brilliant.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that.
Brilliant. That's brilliant.
Yeah. It is. It's a choice. And that's a beautiful. Thank you, both of you.
Great alternative.
When I named that as the thought, the control, I did, there was a little bit of me that was like, we can get into a philosophical debate if any of us are in control or not. But you know what? Sometimes you just got to go with what you go for. And Rhonda, you even questioned, like, is that the deepest thought? Probably not. There's probably a better one, but that's what was there right there in the moment. And that's okay.
Yep.
Sometimes
you
just have to start somewhere. And it sounds, and please tell me if I'm wrong, Tracy, but it sounds like you're in a different place with it now.
I can't tell you guys, and I'm not just saying this. I feel like, oh, I can do this now. I'm looking at it instead of, I feel like I've turned, I've made a right turn, and I'm on a different street. I feel like I'm a completely different path right now, and it feels really good, and it's exciting and relaxed. I'm looking forward to my new, I'm looking forward, actually. I'm kind of excited.
That's good.
But here's something that might be fun to help kind of support you in integrating this. I'm going to bring it back now to the original living space metaphor. Is there something about the space that you live in that you can choose to do to it that will make it feel a little bit more like yours, that you can see that you have choice over what's there? May not be the whole place, but a space in that space.
Well, I'll tell you, I have a huge living room, like a huge circular marble table that's my dining room table, but that has been like the center of my universe. And I have a desk that I use, this beautiful desk in my bedroom, but I've been using this table, and everything is on this table. It's like if you look at a clock, at every hour there is something on this table that is not related. But, and I think I need to organize that table and put a big, beautiful orchid in the middle of it and organize the things that don't belong at that table. I think that, I know that that's what I need to do.
Beautiful.
And move the,
that's just the, a smaller practice where you get to practice, look, I can choose to put this here, or I can choose to take that off. This beautiful stone table is the foundation. It's a symbol of me and the choices that I get to make. Are there outside things out of my control? Sure. But I have choice in the universal lack of control, or whatever you want to call it. So I think that's a perfect place to play with that idea of choice. And then you get to see it outside of the home with this relationship. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
And maybe, Rhonda, you could help me and check in.
To. And it's interesting when Michael said he was going to go back to the living space. That's exactly what my intuition would have done, is take it back to your living space and go and do the same thing. So, yeah, we should definitely get together and work on that a bit more.
Okay. Thank you both. You're wonderful. Thank you.
Cool. You are welcome. Rhonda, I want to check in with you real quick. How are you feeling?
Not too bad. I mean, look, I haven't had as much coaching practice as I would like over the last month, so that kind of bothered me a little bit. And obviously this is a new tool, but I felt like I needed to dive in, even though I needed some help. So thank you very much.
I think you did brilliantly, for whatever that's worth to you. And it is, as an instructor, it's sometimes hard co-facilitating with somebody who's learning a tool because it brings up stuff for them. And I honestly just want you to know, I feel like you were very receptive to my support. And thank you. I mean, I felt like you and I were in the workshop trying this tool on together and trying to figure out different ways. And a lot of the credit goes to you to be willing to be like, oh, yeah, I'm willing to see another way to do it, or sure, let me try this. Man, that's going to make you such a good coach if you can keep doing that. Because we're always learning something new and a better way to do it. And when you start to have that kind of attitude while with your client, there's room for them to be in that co-creative process. And I think that, for me, that's what's fun about coaching, is that you don't have to have the answers. You're on this journey with them. You're partnering up with this person to find clarity for them. And that's just so much fun. And I saw that quality in you tonight. And
thank you.
That's not something that can be taught. It's something that you really have to figure out on your own. And it seems to me like you really got it. So I want to highlight that for you. And so, yes, you may go to that place where I haven't had much practice.
I've definitely been very mindful of there's no need to be right. It's not about being right. It's just not getting over the ego of, oh, if I get something wrong, which is what you said about Martha throwing out hunches all the time and she doesn't care they're right, wrong, and kind of just being cool with that. So,
well, you really shined in that respect tonight. So, beautiful job. Okay. So you're welcome. We've got a half hour left. Real quick opportunity to ask questions before we go into our next coaching pair. I went a little longer than I expected, but I think it was worth it. Question?
I have a quick question.
Sure.
And I'm saying this because I can't really think of a certain spot in my home that I don't enjoy. I kind of get the temporary thing like was discussed in the last session, but what would you suggest if your client says, well, I don't know, I don't have a spot in my house?
Is of all the spots in your house, like think of it like body compass. Are all of them 10s on your body compass, or is any a 9? And if then I would just go for the one that's the area of least satisfaction and putter around with that. And that
okay.
said, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the beauty of that term, area of least satisfaction. It doesn't mean you don't like it. It's just of all the things. And then, of course, if you start trying this with a client, they're like, no, I love my house. It's awesome. It might not be worth using that tool. Like, okay, but 9 times out of 10, people can identify an area pretty quickly that they're like, I love my house, but those curtains have got to go, or something like that, you know? So that's what I would do. Cool. Anybody else? Okay. So is there somebody who wants to volunteer to go? It's hopefully somebody who hasn't had a chance to go in a while. Just going down my list here.
Michael, this is Sarah. Excuse me. I'd be willing to be coached.
Okay, super. Sarah, so you will be the client. And Catherine, have you had a chance to coach in a while? I can't recall. I don't have my book.
Yeah, I did last time.
Did. See, I always picked the person who went last time. I'm sorry.
I was the coach last session, yeah.
Okay, fine. Then we'll see if, let's see. Bridget, willing to coach?
Wait, I was on mute, sorry. yes, I would be willing to coach.
Thank you. So you're going to coach Sarah, and we have about 20 minutes. And if you want any support or have questions along the way, just ask, and I'll jump in if I can be of support. Take it away.
Okay. All right. Sarah,
yes.
How are you?
I'm good.
Well, where in your home or in your living space are you least satisfied?
It's my office. And my desk area. It's a room that I, actually both my husband and I have our computers in the same room. And I have piles on my desk of folders and notes and a different pile for different activities, and I just keep piling one pile on another pile. And I didn't used to be like this. I used to be very organized. But for some reason, I can't clean my desk up. I can start getting it cleaned up, but I can never finish it.
Can you tell me what's going on when you start to clean it up and what's going on? What are you feeling when you can't seem to finish it?
Well, when I start to clean it up, I feel good because I feel like I've accomplished something. I'll start with a pile and I'll get that all organized. And then I'll look at another pile and I'll just it just looks overwhelming to me. And so I just decide that I don't want to do it. And I just put it out of my mind and go about my business. And then the mail comes, and then there's another pile. Or the taxes, another pile.
Yeah. Is there a place in your life where you're feeling overwhelmed?
You know, I was thinking about this. I'm not a very good multitasker. I do better doing one task at a time and finishing it. And in most of my life, I do that. But in my office, I think because I've got a lot of things going on, well, that's right, we're going back to where in my life. Well, I think as I'm kind of semi-retired, and I've got a lot of different things going on. We're traveling. I've got grandchildren. I'm doing this coach training. I still have to take care of the bills. So I kind of feel overwhelmed in having to balance all of those things.
Out of all those things that you were just listing off, which part seems to be the where your body compass gets tightest? Where are you most overwhelmed? What's causing that? Because you listed quite a few things there, so I can see why you might be a little overwhelmed. But what is the area that's causing you the most stress?
You know, it's really hard for me to pinpoint.
Stop for a second.
Yeah.
You're having trouble pinpointing it. I'm curious if the desk, which has a whole bunch of things on it, and sometimes it's organized and sometimes it's not, and it gets overwhelming. And then you named a whole bunch of things in your life that you're trying to manage and sometimes get overwhelming. So what I'm hearing or I'm wondering is the desk and the way the desk shows up in your life, is that like all of these little parts of your life trying to figure out how to make them work and not work, and sometimes it's clean and nice and neat, and then other times it's all over the place and overwhelming?
Yeah.
Or is like what Bridget's asking you, is it, she's asking you to, is there one of those things in your life that's similar to what going on with your desk?
Yeah, I don't think it's just one thing. I think it's the balancing of all of them.
Right. That's
that
what
seems
I
overwhelming to me. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So let me go back to Bridget for a second. So the desk that gets overwhelming is like all the other things in her life right now.
Mm-hmm.
What I heard you doing, which I think is great, was you were looking for the limiting belief, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Here's another way you could use this tool. So you've found the parallel. Now you can go back to the desk and get a little, what do you want your desk to look like? Like solve the problem with the desk, kind of find ways to make it so that it's what she wants it to look like. First find out what it is she wants it to look like, and then see if the way she problem solves the desk can be applied to problem solving the management of all those things in her life. I don't know if it's going to work or not. It's a way that you could go with it. So,
okay.
No pressure. Let's just experiment and see if that works.
Okay. Thank you. So, Sarah, let's go back to the desk.
Okay.
And can you just visualize what it looks like when you get that overwhelm feeling? And then let's go look at the desk when it's the way that you like it, as Michael referenced, when it is organized, when it does feel right. And then, so how do you get from that? How do you go from point A to point B? How do you go from when it looks unbalanced and it makes you uncomfortable to where you do? What's going on?
So let's stop there. That's too many steps. You've got all the right steps. But the first step is kind of like, you know, because you asked her, what would it look like when it was right? What does it look like when it's wrong? How do you get it from one to the other? That might be overwhelmed. This is where you can take the metaphor, and instead of playing the ideal day, have you guys learned that tool yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. It's in the manual somewhere. We used to teach it in this cohort, but they've moved it, I thought earlier, but I think you're going to learn it. And I'll just give you the quick background of it. It's a tool where you walk your client through their ideal day, right? Simple as that. Tell me what your ideal day would be like. Here you're just going to do a microcosm of that and say, what's the ideal desk look like? That's step one. Mm. Let's just find out what she wants it to look like.
Okay.
End of sentence. So let's ask. Go ahead. She heard the question. So why don't you just tell us, what's your ideal desk look like, Sarah?
Well, you know, that's a really good question because my ideal desk still has a messy part to it. And there's a part of me that doesn't want to be in control of everything.
We can hook you up with Tracy. I'm just playing.
I used to be a real perfectionist, and I have tried to get out of that perfectionism. And so if I have a little mess, it means that I am not totally perfect, and that's okay. But when it gets to be a little bit too much, like my desk is now, then it tends to be overwhelming. And the other thing is that some of these things I'm afraid to put away because I'm afraid that I will forget them or forget where I put them, I'm just not ready to move them out of my eyesight.
Let me stop you there.
Okay.
So I hear, I don't know exactly what it is, but I hear a fear in there. Bridget, first her ideal desk is fairly neat and organized, but it has a little bit of a mess because it shows her, it reflects back to her that she's willing to be in a space where she's not a perfectionist or over the top trying to be in control. Great, I can go along with that. That's pretty clear. And then she started to say, but there's this piece of me that if I start organizing or putting things in their place or putting things away, that I'm going to lose sight of them and forget them. That my marmoset went, what? And now I'm curious as to if that same energy or if I put things away, I'm going to lose sight of them or however she wants to put it, shows up anywhere else in her life. And we'll just ask her, does it show up anywhere else in your life? How might that apply to what you're telling us about managing all these other aspects of life?
Well, it shows up in my life in that my memory is not as good as it used to be.
Mm.
And I'm a very visual person. I've always been a very visual person. So seeing things is important to me.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, it's like having a photograph album to remind you of memories. And I'm afraid if I put some of this stuff away and I want that memory to come back, I won't know where to find it.
So let me just check in with Bridget. What are you thinking, Bridget? I kind of feel like we're at the cusp of something that might be really big for her.
I do too, and I'm not sure. should I just be really direct? I mean, I feel like it is too, and then I'm thinking this would definitely need to be like one of those shows to be continued, because I feel like it feels big to me.
Yeah, it does. And I hear what you're saying. You're saying, tell me where I'm wrong. I have 10 minutes left on this call. I don't want to open up a can of worms, because it could be that, and then be like, all right, got to go. Is that where you're at?
Right. Yeah. Yes,
I think that's wise of you. So let's see if we can find a way to ask, you know, some probing questions gently to just see if that is in fact what it is. And one way I might do it is just to say, Sarah, I heard you say that there's this part of you that's, you know, your memory's not what it used to be. Is that something that you're concerned about? Like on a daily basis, your memory?
On a daily basis? No, but I see memory loss happening in my husband's family, his older sisters, and we're not that far behind. And it's scary to think that it might happen to me too.
Gotcha. I understand that. So you've actually heard Bridget and I just talk in front of you about you. Do you feel like we're this is relevant to what we're talking about or not? Because I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Well, I think it is a little bit, but whether we're on the cusp of something big, I'm not feeling that there's. I mean, if it is something big, it's down pretty deep, and it's not coming to the surface.
Good. And so when I said we're on, I really meant the potential, right?
Uh-huh.
If my marmoset went off, and if you're about to tell me that there's some real fears about memory and memory loss, what neither of us wanted to do is open that up with such little time left. So we were probing.
Mm-hmm.
The feedback I'm getting from you now is, yeah, it's something I think about. I see the possibility in my family, in my husband's family, but no, it's not like a big threat in my life or a driving factor for me not cleaning up my desk or wanting to put things in.
Right.
Okay. I don't want to dig down a hole where there's no gold there, so we'll back off. And if ever you feel that's something worth bringing up again, let us know.
Okay.
Makes sense? So actually, I think that's a good place to stop. I know we haven't gone further with you on this, Sarah, but what's valuable, I think, is that when you're coaching clients, there's all sorts of decisions you have to make, like the one that Bridget and I were just talking about. Do we open something up that could be really big? It feels like it might be really big if there is something behind that door. So let's not, with 10 minutes left. And also, notice how I just went back to the client and was like, what I meant by could be big is this. Is it big? You have to give me feedback. I don't really know. I'm totally happy to be totally wrong. And if it is something that's real for you, when you're ready and comfortable to bring it to the table, know that I'm willing to explore it with you. Does that make sense, Bridget? I'm just going to ask you because you and I were doing this together.
Yes, it really did, because I was looking for a limiting belief with a limited amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't know, like, going to the desk and visualize it. I heard several things there. So yes, and then just kind of working through which one hit home the most, but I was like you, I wasn't sure what to do with the memory piece. So I completely get it. I was going to work with balancing life, trying to go that way, and then when we went down the other road, I was like, ooh, I would need, you know, maybe another hour or more.
Maybe.
or two or four parts.
Yeah, who knows? The one thing that popped up, you know, when she started to talk about my ideal desk, that was another thing I want to highlight. When you're talking about the metaphor, they might say, well, this is the area of least satisfaction. And then we went over to the parallel thing, which is life is kind of like the desk. And then I had us go back to the metaphor and say, well, what would the ideal desk look like? I really liked that she was able to say and recognize, in a way she was celebrating the fact that she's come a long way and that she doesn't have to have a perfect desk. Her ideal desk has room for a little messiness. The problem is sometimes the messiness gets a little out of control. So what popped in my mind at that point was boundaries. How can she create a container for herself where there's room for things to be a little messy, but contained enough that they don't get overwhelmingly messy?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I might explore that with her. You know, and is there a fear
that's
in that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Well, let's ask Sarah. So, again, Sarah, you heard us talk a little bit more about you. Any of what we're talking about how the coaching went and where we might go with you resonate or make sense?
Yeah, I like
that you would have.
I like what you just said about boundaries and being contained enough, because I know that I have trouble with boundaries and letting things in that pull me and knock me off balance. So there's the whole balance thing is part of it. Boundaries is part of it. And it's, you know, this desk has been messy for probably 10 years. So this is not something new.
you know what, actually, Sarah, that just popped into my mind. Do you know how, I mean, I don't know that everybody's is like this, but in any place I ever lived, the kitchen, pretty much there was drawers or shelves for plates and dishes. There was a place for glasses. There was a place for forks and knives. You know, there was a certain organization to everything, but there was always one drawer in the kitchen that we called the junk drawer, where it was like everything miscellaneous just kind of got piled into that place. So it was like there was organization and there was a contained space for disorganization. Does this image resonate with you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, when I first met my husband, he lived in a beautiful house, and I would go to visit them. The whole house was gorgeous, but their den was a wreck. And I thought that that was kind of cool. I'm not sure why, but, you know, it was small, and they spent time in there. And this office is the same kind of way. The rest of the house is pretty organized and open. There's lots of space. But the office has lots of books and stuff around it. It's like my junk drawer. It's my junk room.
So,
but I have to do work in there.
You named the desk, though, as the area of least satisfaction. I heard that it's got some organization, but it also has some disorganization. Does the disorganization need a little bit more containment? It's like a smaller space or a more contained space for the disorganization so that the organization doesn't get disorganized?
Yes.
Does that make sense? That was a tongue twister.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. It needs to have a smaller place on the desk.
Can you think in this moment of can you think of a way to do that in this moment? Not that you have to, but just the possibility.
Well, yeah, I could go through one pile at a time, maybe one pile a day, and clean it up. And I do try to do that maybe once a year, and it's time to do it.
Let me. I'm going to throw out a possibility just because of the time, because I want to see if we can still stick the metaphor here. Because you do have piles, I get that. Is there a way you could have your ideal desk, nice, neat, clean, the way you like it, but with a a specified corner of it or a box for things to be disorganized within that box, whether it be bills or staplers or pencils or whatever. But the rest of it stays nice. Does that make sense? And is that possible?
That is possible. But, you know, something else that just popped up, whenever there is an open area on my desk or on a counter in the kitchen, my husband puts stuff on it. So sometimes I think, and this is, I know I don't want to take time, but sometimes if I clean that area of my desk off, then he'll put another bill on it, or he'll put some other papers or something that he thinks I should read, or and that's a boundary thing too.
Yes, indeed.
You know, I clean it off, and then it gets someone else piles stuff on it.
So could you teach him about the space where he could put things, or at least ask for that?
We could have a talk about it.
Yeah,
yeah, but you know, it's kind of hard to teach an old dog new tricks.
Let's give the old dog a chance, though, right?
Okay, all right.
Like, I mean, yeah. You could just say, look, I'm working on something. When it comes to my desk, and only my desk is all I'm talking about right now, I'm going to have a box. If ever there's anything you want to add or share with me, make sure you put it in that box. If the rest of the desk is super clean and there's plenty of space, anything that you want to bring to me goes in that box. Can you just try that for me?
That's a good idea. Yeah, I can try. That's a good idea.
Right? That's
yeah.
A win-win for both of you, I think. And now, just
yeah.
Because we're at the end, what I'd like you to do is ask yourself, what's the box in the other areas of my life? Where is the chaos? Where can I control the chaos or the disorganization? With all those other things in your life, how is can that be just like what you just came up with the desk? And sit with that for a little while and see what comes up. Maybe you'll report back on the forum for us.
Okay. Okay,
because
cool. That'll take some thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. And Bridget, maybe you'll check in with her on that and just see how it's going. Is that something you could do if you feel called to?
I would love to.
Cool.
Good.
Awesome. I just wanted to see if we could wrap that up. I wasn't sure. It kind of feels like we got a little something there. Bridget, the same compliment goes to you that I gave earlier to Rhonda. I love it. It felt to me like you were open to doing this with me and having me jump in places. And again, that is what will make you a phenomenal coach. So I encourage you to keep doing that. I liked your questioning. I really thought you were present for her. You gave some great reflective feedback or reflective listening. I have to tell you guys, I said it to the earlier class. I know I said it to you last time we spoke, and I have said it to multiple instructors in MBI, I am super, super impressed with this cohort of coaches. You guys have raised the bar. So please keep doing what you're doing. If you have questions for me at any time, just ask on the forum, and I will do my best to support you however I can. We're back together next week for talking about wigs, and we'll just be doing Coach the Coach. And I will post, you know, the prep work, although I know you guys have all the information in your manual about what you need to study, but I'll do my best to post it up in the next 24 hours or so. So until next week, have a happy coaching. I don't even know what to say. So I'll say goodbye, and I'll see you guys next week. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
You're welcome.